came from Atlanta, we actually greet people when they say good afternoon. So we could try that again. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Now I feel welcome. I'm in a different group. I'm coming from the employer perspective, which is a little different than most of you in the room who are the researchers. So bear with me. I am Adrienne Mims. I'm the medical director for APS Healthcare in Georgia. And what I'd like to do is tell you a little bit about who we are as the employer and then give two examples of use of community health workers, one in a medical care setting and the other in a behavioral health or certified peer specialist setting. To begin with, we are a very large specialty healthcare company with over 1,200 employees across the nation in 20 states, serving more than 20 million people. Specifically, we are designed in three business groups: the commercial sector, the public sector, which is Medicaid, and in Puerto Rico. And from our public sector, we actually touch on 40% of all Medicaid beneficiaries across the country. We have programs in case management, disease management, utilization review, and external review for behavioral health. So that's how we actually contact a lot of Medicaid recipients. So in my sector, which is in Georgia, I deal with public programs, and this is my typical patient population that I'm dealing with, those with multiple comorbidities. This is the subset of Medicaid that is not in managed care, so usually the managed care carve-out. So 85% of our patients have three or more comorbidities. 50% have a mental illness such as depression all the way to schizophrenia. We have the carve-outs such as the mental retardation, medically fragile children, those Medicare patients who are at risk for institutionalization, and so they have other supportive needs. There's a high rate of homelessness or near homelessness. They have a lot of challenges with transportation, low health literacy. And in this group, we have a high use of caregivers. So you, as imagined, there's a large degree of health disparities. So we collaborate with the Morehouse School of Medicine National Center for Primary Care that was founded by Dr. David Satcher to address health care disparities. They helped us with our design of really bridging the gap between the patient and family with the physician with the other resources that are important, specifically the community resources, Medicaid as the payment system, and the behavioral health employer. So let me tell you about our first example, which is the use of community health workers that we help to place in community centers, or FQHC, the Federal Qualified Health Centers. We had a relationship with the National Association of Community Health Workers using AmeriCorps workers in these settings. APS Healthcare, which is my company, we paid the stipend for the community health workers in Georgia, Wyoming, and Missouri. There was a lot of interest in having community health workers in these FQHCs by the executives that work there, because I described to you a lot of the patient population that is needed, and as you can tell from that, much needs to be done outside of the medical visit. And we were able to find people very enthusiastic and hardworking, and most of the people that we were able to find were rather young. They were usually in transition between different levels of college or college to graduate school. And they were in the category that we called lay health workers, because the other people that we employed were nurses, RNs, social workers, and case managers. They provided services such as community outreach, coordinating health fairs, usually from the community health center, doing patient follow-up for those that they've already identified were hard to reach, provided transportation, and some lay health education. But we had challenges with this model because the stipend was modest, not enough, okay. And because of that, we then found that it was really hard to recruit people into this role. That took a lot of staff time from the employer perspective to try to find people to serve this role. And when we found people through the AmeriCorps, they were usually part-time and for less than a year. So when you have an employee that is in this setting, it was a challenge to get the facility, the community health centers, to accept the person to come in with lay credentials for a short period of time, working part-time, and you're not quite sure what they're going to do. And unfortunately, our contract with NAC ended recently. I was just in another presentation that I learned why this isn't working. There's no training, which is a key important part. So let me move to another type of community health worker. And this was in the state of Georgia in the mental health services division. And up to 1998, all of people with chronic mental illness were managed through state Medicaid and traditional day treatment programs, all of them. But around this time, there was an audit, and that triggered some accountability questions as to really, are we spending the dollars in the best way? And at the same time, in the mental health field across the country, there became a change in the belief model in mental health, such that people, initially, they were just warehoused in these day treatments because we felt they couldn't recover. And then there became a trend that, yeah, people really can recover from mental health. And then very radically, the system that we put them in can actually promote recovery. And so after 1998, the state Medicaid began to change their funding for mental health. They included a rehabilitation option, which was new. They began dismantling and restructuring the day services so that they can pay for these additional services. And they contracted with APS Healthcare, my company, to provide external review for behavioral health care. And they also mandated that we hire a person with mental illness to serve as the manager of community relations. This is a lay health worker. And they would oversee the development of this peer support program. Very forward thinking. And so in the field of behavioral health, this is the definition of recovery. And recovery refers to the process in which people, and specifically we're talking about those with a mental illness, they're able to live, work, and learn and participate fully in their communities, not warehoused in day programs. For some individuals, recovery is the ability to live a fulfilling and productive life despite having a disability. And for others, recovery implies the reduction of symptoms or the remission of symptoms. And so we took this into the state of Medicaid in Georgia and looked at the way they were spending money. And this is the amount that they spend for an average person per year. And before 1999, 100% of that dollars went to day treatment. And this was going to be for the rest of their life. This is all we could do. But in the current method, this is as of 2004, you can see that day treatment dropped to only 5%. And a larger portion went into psychosocial rehabilitation. And if you look at that now, that group is subdivided into many other categories, such as work rehab, educational rehab, family support, and other things. But what I want to point out is that new 27% that went to peer support, that's a new carve-out that was not there before, and this is state mandated. Specifically, peer support provides an opportunity for a mental health consumer to teach and support each other in the acquisition and exercise of skills needed to manage their symptoms and utilize the natural resources in their community. So you're taking community health workers who will be these peer supports. And they funded it at $6 million annually. This broke down to about $6.12 an hour. In Atlanta, that goes a lot farther than in Washington and New York. It's still not enough money, though. Okay. So this is actually a program that they go through a certification process, and this is overseen by the Office of Community Relations. And my company, APS Healthcare, sponsors that manager of community relations, a person with mental illness who actually is the overseer of this total program. And in the program, the training includes many things such as continuing education, ethics, confidentiality, how to use authorization forms and medical necessity documentation. And as of 2004, over 170 certified peer specialists have been trained. The usual class size is 30 people, and there's no challenge in trying to find people who want to do this. And they have to pass an exam to become a certified peer specialist. And on the first exam, 75% pass, and on the second, 98% pass. So we're pretty effective in the training. And this kind of gives you a scope of what they're being trained on. And these are really key skills that a person in this area would need. And from the other lecture I just came from, it's not a lecture, it's actually workshop format, so they do enjoy this. But they look at things that combating that negative self-talk, having setting realistic recovery goals and problem solving. They do recovery dialogues and do some role modeling on recovery. And what they do when they actually in their role as a peer specialist is they spend time with the consumer during their day, different times, day during the week, or in group setting, actually modeling this behavior. This is unpublished data, looked at the evaluation of the certified peer specialist. And based in 2004, this is what we found in terms of the employment status of those individuals. 66% were employed full-time in this role. Many people only want part-time employment because if you have a certified mental illness and became disabled because of that, you get full Medicaid in the state of Georgia. But if you work full-time, you would come off that benefit. So that was one of the things that was driving the part-time employment. They did do an evaluation that looked at the efficacy of peer support versus the day support program. And this was not a randomized trial, unfortunately. It was a comparative change design. And we looked at certain outcomes of interest at enrollment versus follow-up. And those were around three domains that we looked at. Current symptoms or behaviors, the skill deficits that a person had, and the use of available resources or needs. And the subgroup of people that we looked at were those, the SPMI, if you're into mental illness, that's a serious and persistent mental illness. This is a group of people who are generally housed in day treatment programs. They had a primary diagnosis of schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or major depression to the point that it made them disabled. Now, the measurement instrument was a survey that we used in Georgia called the Treatment Request and Integrated Georgia Reporting Survey, TRIGGERS, okay? And this was a form that was already used in the community. It was completed by the providers of mental health services as a part of reauthorization of their Medicaid services. And so this is the two groups. There were those that were enrolled in peer support in the fiscal year of 2003. 160 of them, we had an average of 260 days between their trigger surveys. And we're going to compare that to the group who were enrolled in day support the fiscal year 2002. Now, if they subsequently went into the peer support, we did not include them in the group. So this was a 488 people with an average of 247 days between their two trigger scores. Now, if you look just within the group of people that were had the certified peer specialist, we did find an improvement in all three of these outcomes in terms of current symptoms and behaviors, the skills and abilities and resource needed. And although each one of these outcomes is a small difference, it is statistically significant from zero. And as I said before, it's not a randomized trial, but we did control for some factors when we made this next comparison with the day treatment. We compared with, we controlled for the enrollment pre-trigger score, the time between assessments, their attitude towards recovery, and that's actually a measure on the trigger, the gender, age, and primary diagnosis of schizophrenia, because that's a large group here, race, ethnicity, and marital status. So we did a logistic regression analysis. And on bullet two, you see that for each of the three outcome measures that were of interest to us, the symptoms, behaviors, skills, and needed resources, the level of improvement for the consumers in their peer support was far greater than day support. So this showed Medicaid that what they were paying for really had a true impact. And so they were very happy with this. A formal evaluation that can be published is currently underway by Larry Fricks and his group in conjunction with Emory University. So from the perspective of APS Healthcare, where I'm involved, we are the ERO that really looks at the utilization of Medicaid dollars for behavioral health. We have seen far more people being able to be served using the peer support and the rehabilitation model, and we've had no trouble with continuing the employment of our manager for community services, and she's well-liked and able to come and speak to anybody who would like. and I just left some contact information here. We are committed and interested in being more involved in the future with community health workers in the medical care setting, but we need to figure out how to do it right. And that's why I'm here at the conference. Thank you.